Well, welcome to The Catholic Reason, a radio production of St. Michael Catholic Radio based in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, where we think through various claims made by the Catholic Church concerning issues of faith, morality, and culture, and provide reasons behind those claims. I'm Dr. Carlo Broussard, staff apologist and speaker for Catholic Answers at Catholic.com, and a member of the Chancery Evangelization Team at the Diocese of Tulsa in eastern Oklahoma. The Catholic Reason airs locally here in Tulsa every Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. here on St. Michael Catholic Radio, 94.9 and 102.9, but you may be listening on your own local Catholic radio station at a different time, since The Catholic Reason is aired on other Catholic stations throughout the country. So if you're listening outside the Tulsa area, a very special welcome to you and thanks for joining me today. Note that you can download the show through whichever podcast platform that you use by subscribing to the Eastern Oklahoma Catholic Podcast. That's the Eastern Oklahoma Catholic Podcast. You can also access the archived episodes at my website, carlobroussard.com, under both the audio and video tab. And be sure to check out all the other great resources that I have available for you there. All of the work that I do for Catholic Answers is hosted there in one location. My articles, the videos of Catholic Answers Live, along with the audio files, and my podcast for Catholic Answers called The Sunday Catholic Word, and a host of other extra apologetical content that I do for my personal ministry. Okay, so the majority of topics that we deal with here on The Catholic Reason fall within the category of the Catholic-Protestant dialogue. However, every once in a while, we deal with an issue that falls outside those boundaries and more within the circles of dialogue with worldviews that dominate our current cultural landscape. And today is one of those times when we're going to deal with a topic that falls within this sort of category. In 2011, the Freedom From Religious Foundation sponsored a billboard in Columbus, Ohio, featuring an atheist and the caption, quote unquote, "I can be good without God." This billboard expresses a major obstacle that atheists and agnostics face when it comes to acknowledging God's existence. They think that because they can be good without God, God isn't necessary for morality. And if God isn't necessary for morality, so it's argued, well, then it's likely that he doesn't exist. And even if he did, he wouldn't be the God of traditional theism. So it's this idea that since an atheist can be good without God, that we can articulate a morality without an appeal to God, we can be good without God, there's no reason to think that God exists. So how might we respond to this? Well, our first response is that we can agree that an atheist can be good in some respects without acknowledging God. The acknowledgement of God, the belief in God, would not be necessary for an atheist to be good in some respects. There's a kernel of truth in this line of reasoning that are articulated and expressed on the billboard in Columbus, Ohio, or this argument from an atheistic position. It's not necessary to acknowledge God's existence, to profess belief in God, to do what's good, nor is it necessary to appeal to God in order to know a lot of things as to what is good human behavior for us as human beings. So again, it's not necessary to acknowledge God's existence to know and to do what is good, at least in some respects. When we speak of good and bad behavior, we refer to the kinds of acts that either achieve or frustrate the ends toward which our nature directs us: self-preservation, propagation of the species, knowledge, love, harmonious living in society, just to name a few of the types of ends or goals that our nature directs us toward. And these can be identified within our human nature without an appeal to God. We do not need to appeal to God in order to discover this particular order of nature, the ins and the goes that our nature directs us toward, the achievement of which is perfective of our nature. For example, an atheist can know that killing an innocent human being is bad human behavior because it unjustly thwarts another's self-preservation and freedom, both of which are ins toward which our nature directs us and therefore are natural to us insofar as we're human beings. An atheist can also know that lying to a person is bad human behavior, just another way of saying immoral, contrary to reason. Why? Because it frustrates the end or the goal of the communicative act of assertion. That act of communication by which we present something as if it were true. These sorts of precepts, thou shalt not kill innocent human beings, thou shalt not lie, among others, make up what is known in the Catholic tradition as the natural moral law. A law built into the nature of man and thereby subject to being known by the natural light of reason. This is a law built into our nature that all human beings are able to know by reason alone. The American legal scholar Charles Rice, in his book 50 Questions on the Natural Law, What Is It and Why We Need It?, he defines the natural moral law in a nice and succinct way that I think captures what we're trying to get at here. Quote, it's a set of manufacturer's directions written into our nature so that we can discover through reason how we ought to act. That comes from chapter 2 of his book. And I think that captures the natural moral law nicely. So we can see how someone can come to know and do what is good according to the natural moral law. And so the natural moral law serves as a measure or a standard that is available for all human beings, including atheists, to come to know by the natural light of human reason. And we can know this by way of philosophy. Now, the appeal to the natural moral law in order to know what is good or bad human behavior is also confirmed by St. Paul in Romans chapter 2, verses 14 through 15. When he reflects on the Gentiles' ability to know God's law without having the benefit of Judeo-Christian revelation, he writes this, when Gentiles who have not the law do by nature what the law requires, notice, by nature, what the law requires, so that which is divinely revealed, some aspects of it are going to be inscribed in nature, which the Gentiles can come to know and follow. They are a law to themselves, he says, even though they do not have the law. They show that what the law requires, that is, the divinely revealed law of the Ten Commandments, say, is written on their heart, something that they can come to discover by looking to nature, as opposed to appealing to the divine revelation. Since this law that St. Paul is speaking of and that we can know by way of philosophy is inscribed in human nature and is accessible by the natural light of human reason, well then we must conclude that atheists and agnostics can know and follow it, at least in some aspects of it. Atheist Dan Barker, the president of the Freedom From Religious Foundation, seems to hold to this system of morality, at least in a seed form. In his 1997 debate with Doug Wilson, entitled Does the Triune God Exist?, he stated this, there is an objective basis for morality. It's human nature and pain. We evolved to require water, for example. What if we had evolved to require something else like arsenic? But relative to our human nature, to what helps us and what either enhances our life or causes harm for our life, we can say relative to our human nature, this is something that's good. Baker expresses here what many atheists mean when they say that they can be good without God. They can come to acknowledge what is good for us insofar as we're human beings, and then act accordingly. And this is something that Catholics can agree with to a point. However, this doesn't mean God is irrelevant to morality. So in my next two responses here, I'll explain why. Okay, so the claim that we want to defend here is that even though Our atheist friends can come to know and be good in some respects without an appeal to God by way of appealing to the natural moral law. It doesn't follow from that that God doesn't exist, or it doesn't follow from that that God is irrelevant to morality, such that an atheist doesn't need God and can exclude God from the equation of morality completely so. Now, one reason why God, if he exists, would not be irrelevant to morality, nor could he be irrelevant in principle, is that the natural moral law would involve our duty to worship God as the creator, and of course, to direct our choices to him as our ultimate end. If he exists, he would be our creator. If he's our creator, he would demand worship of him, and thereby the worship of him would constitute our goodness as a human being. And then if he is our creator, he would also be our ultimate life's goal. And if he's our ultimate life's goal, well, then we would need to be directing our choices to him as our ultimate end. He would be the infinite good in which we would find our complete human perfection and happiness. So if God, by definition, is the creator and sustainer of our existence, the one to whom we owe every ounce of our being, well, then he would have an absolute right to our worship and adoration. And such worship and adoration of God as our creator would constitute our human perfection, since such acts would fulfill the duty that we have by nature, hence the perfection of nature. Now, we're going to continue this line of reasoning. I'm going to have to hit the pause button here because I'm coming up on my first break. But don't go anywhere. Stay tuned, because on the other side, we're going to pick back up and continue to think through why, if God exists, our goodness would be constituted by the worship of him and directing our life choices to him. Talk to you on the other side of the break. God bless. Well, welcome back, my friends, to The Catholic Reason, a radio production of St. Michael Catholic Radio based here in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, where we think through various claims made by the Catholic Church concerning issues of faith, morality, and culture and provide reasons behind those claims. In today's episode, we're looking at a topic that goes beyond the boundaries of what we normally talk about here on The Catholic Reason, namely the Catholic-Protestant dialogue, and asking the question whether the claim that an atheist can be good without God entails that God is completely irrelevant to morality, such that we don't need God to offer a complete account of morality. And so we're looking at this claim. We started off with the claim that was in 2011 posted on a billboard of an atheist, "I can be good without God," the implication seemingly to be we don't need God to account for morality. And this is taken by many atheists and agnostics to be an argument against the theistic view. And so what we were saying in our first segment was, you know, there's a kernel of truth. We acknowledge that our atheist friends and agnostics can come to know and live accordingly as to what is good inscribed within our nature on account of the natural moral law. There is no need for an atheist to appeal to God or anybody. There's not a need to appeal to God or to acknowledge God's existence in order to come to know some things that are good for us as human beings, and therefore what is good human behavior, since good moral human behavior is just simply behavior that is consistent with what we know to be good for us insofar as we're human beings on account of the nature that we have that determines what is good for us and what is perfective of us given our nature as human beings. And so that is available, that data of what is good is available to all human beings, whether atheists or not. So there's no need to appeal to God's existence to come to know those things that are good for us as human beings. Now, as I was mentioning before the break, that doesn't mean that God is entirely irrelevant to morality. And as I was pointing out, one reason why God, if he were to exist, would not be irrelevant to morality, nor could he be irrelevant in principle, is that the natural moral law would necessarily involve our duty to worship God as the creator and to direct our choices to him as our ultimate end. If God, by definition, is the creator and sustainer of our existence, the one to whom we owe every ounce of our being, well, then he would have an absolute right to our worship and adoration. And such worship and adoration of God as our Creator would constitute our human perfection, since those activities would fulfill the duty that we have by nature. So there would be an actualization of the duty, a fulfillment of the duty, and thereby a fulfillment of our nature, since that duty flows from our nature as being a creature of the Creator, sustained in existence by the Creator. Moreover, if God, by definition, is pure truth and goodness itself, and the desire to know the truth and choose the good is inscribed within our nature, well, then it would belong to our human nature to orient our lives toward God as our ultimate end, which is just another way of saying that it would be good for us as human beings, to orient our lives to God as our end. The point is that if God exists, then the natural moral law would necessarily involve our duty to God. That is, worshiping Him and orienting our lives toward Him would be part of being a good human being. For this reason, no account of morality can be complete, at least on the objective level, without reference to God, on supposition that God exists. So, if God exists, He would indeed be objectively, ontologically, in reality, relative to morality, since our worship of Him and directing our life choices toward Him would be constitutive. They would constitute our very perfection and goodness as a human being. This is why, if God exists, He could not in principle be irrelevant to morality. Now, this line of reasoning helps us see the fallacy in the objection that we're considering here from our atheist friends. They appeal to being a good human being without an appeal to God. And the implied assumption is that they're good in a complete way. No need for God to be good, morally speaking. But given what we've said so far, this claim would be true if and only if God didn't exist. Otherwise, God would have something to do with being completely a good human being. Therefore, if an atheist used his good character as a reason to justify his atheism, well, then he'd just be begging the question, assuming what he's trying to prove, namely that God doesn't exist, right? He would just be assuming that. So, does this mean that an atheist can't in principle be fully good as a human being? That's a good question to ask. The answer depends on whether the atheist is responsible or not for his intellectual shortcoming in seeing the truth of the proposition that God exists. So again, we're trying to ask the question, you know, given what we've said already about the perfect, complete perfection as a human being, our goodness as a human being would involve the worship of God, directing our lives to God if He exists. Does that mean somebody who denies God's existence cannot possibly achieve that sort of complete goodness? So in response, what I'm saying here is that it's going to depend on whether this person is responsible or not for the intellectual shortcoming, falling short of affirming or seeing the truth that God exists. There are some atheists who honestly seek the truth about God's existence and simply haven't been convinced of the evidence. In other words, reason hasn't given permission for the will to move him to assent to the proposition that God exists. And this may very well be for a variety of reasons that aren't his fault. Perhaps he doesn't have the natural intellectual acuity to see the persuasive force of philosophical arguments for God's existence, or the wherewithal to see how an all-good God is consistent with the existence of traumatic events in his or her life, involving both natural and moral evil. So those are plausible explanations as to why an atheist might have the intellectual shortcoming to see the truth of God's existence. Or perhaps he just doesn't have the time to think through such arguments in a robust way. He's got to go to work from 8 to 5, attend to the needs of his wife and the needs of his children. Or perhaps those who have presented philosophical arguments to him have failed in presenting the arguments accurately or clearly. We could go on and on and on, but I think you get the point. It's at least possible that an atheist can fall short of seeing the truth of the proposition that God exists due to no fault of his own, and be one who is honestly seeking truth and is disposed interiorly in his heart and mind to be open to the truth if reason could come to see it and give permission to the will to assent to it. So, can such an atheist still be good? Or to ask from a theological perspective, would salvation be possible for such a person? Well, we can use the Catechism of the Catholic Church as our guide. In paragraph 2125, it identifies atheism, the claim that God doesn't exist, as a sin against the virtue of religion. This means that on an objective level, irrespective of one's intention or circumstances, to deny God's existence is a grave and serious matter, because it would be contrary to reason. It's an act that would contradict and violate reason. But the Catechism goes on to state, quote, "The imputability of this offense, namely atheism, can be significantly diminished in virtue of the intentions and the circumstances." That's paragraph 2125 of the Catechism. In other words, it's possible for someone to embrace atheism, grave matter, and only be venially culpable for it. And you can check out paragraph 1862 of the Catechism, where it spells out the three conditions that must be met for a grave offense to incur mortal guilt and thereby be guilty of mortal sin. So here's one scenario of how this might play out. Let's suppose we have an atheist who isn't responsible for his own ignorance of the truth concerning God's existence. And it's for a reason that he's not responsible for, like the ones that I just articulated. Let's suppose further that he's trying to live according to the truth that he does come to grasp by the natural light of human reason. Such an atheist would still be considered good because insofar as he's honestly, again, we're assuming he's honestly seeking truth, he's seeking God, who is truth itself. The seeking, however, is just simply intuitive and implicit. But nevertheless, he's still seeking truth, who ultimately is God. Now, the question of his goodness here is relative specifically to his atheism. We'd also have to assess whether he's positively rejected the good in some other area of life. So we're just focusing, assuming all of that, we're just focusing specifically on his claim to reject God's existence. But if we assume he hasn't, like if we assume that he hasn't positively rejected the good in other areas of his life, well then he would be good in moral character. Again, assuming he's honestly seeking truth and is not responsible for his intellectual shortcomings. Now, from a theological perspective, that was from a reasonable philosophical perspective concerning the question of whether he would be good or not, morally speaking. From a theological perspective, the Catholic Church teaches that God could even administer the saving grace, his saving grace, to such an atheist apart from the sacrament of baptism. And you can check out paragraph 1257, where the Catechism teaches how God has bound salvation to the sacraments, but he himself is not bound by the sacraments. And on condition the atheist remain in that state of grace until death, he would be saved, assuming again that the intellectual shortcoming in affirming the proposition that God exists is due to no fault of his own and is honestly seeking truth and living in accord with that truth, especially with regard to the goodness of human nature, of our human perfection, God could possibly save that individual. Well, my friends, I'm coming up on my second break here, so stay tuned. More to come on the other side. We'll pick back up. You're listening to The Catholic Reason. I'm Dr. Carlo Broussard. Well, welcome back, my friends, to The Catholic Reason. If you're just joining me, I'm Dr. Carlo Broussard. In today's episode of The Catholic Reason, we're looking at the claim that some atheists and agnostics make, namely, I can be good without God. The implication is that God is completely irrelevant to having a full account of morality, and the assumption being that one can be completely good, morally speaking, without believing in God and without God, ontologically and objectively speaking. So, and if God isn't necessary to account for morality, then he's not really that much of a God to believe in the first place. And so this is often proposed as a reason to justify one's atheism. I can be good without God. I don't need to appeal to God to be moral. Now, in response, we acknowledge that there's a kernel of truth in this line of reasoning such that one can know and live in accord with the good that is discoverable by the natural light of human reason by way of appealing to the natural moral law, looking to an order of good inscribed within our nature, discovering it by reasoning and living accordingly. But as I pointed out, there's only so much good that one can come to know in this state of atheism in rejecting God's existence, because if God did exist, well, then our complete full goodness as a human being would involve the duty to worship Him as the Creator and also to direct our life choices to Him as our ultimate end. But of course, that raises the question, well, if an atheist is in a state of rejecting God, well, then he's not going to be performing his duty to worship God, directing his life choices to Him as his ultimate end. And so does that mean an atheist is without any hope in achieving that state of complete goodness and moral perfection? And so we were responding and saying, well, it's going to depend upon whether the atheist's intellectual shortcoming in affirming that God exists is due to his own fault or not. And so we were introducing this idea of what we call in theology and philosophy invincible ignorance, where one is not responsible for his ignorance. In this case, for the atheist's intellectual shortcoming of seeing intellectually the truth that God exists. If an atheist is not responsible for such an intellectual shortcoming, and he's honestly seeking the truth and living in accord with the truth that he comes to discover, then from a philosophical perspective, it's at least possible that that atheist could still achieve a degree of goodness and moral perfection like someone who is actually explicitly acknowledging God. Because insofar as the atheist is honestly seeking truth and is not responsible for his intellectual shortcomings, and we gave a variety of reasons of why that might be, he would still be fundamentally oriented towards truth and towards goodness, and thereby could be seen, at least from a philosophical perspective, as being morally good, even though he doesn't acknowledge explicitly God's existence. And then from a theological perspective, we saw that according to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, God could indeed administer the grace of salvation to such an individual, assuming that the imputability of the grave offense of denying God is not fully applicable to him. He's not fully culpable. And so thus the offense against God of denying God's existence could be only of a venial guilt rather than mortal guilt. And before the break, I was sharing one possible scenario of where that might play out. And then another scenario could involve an atheist who was baptized during his infancy and then later in life came to reject God and the Christian faith, maybe due to some bad experience. Maybe it was abuse from a pastor or a false understanding of the nature of God. Maybe he was thinking God's just this old man in the sky always looking to punish people. Well, in this case, like in the previous scenario I articulated before the break, the culpability of the atheist for his atheism would be mitigated to such a degree that if he honestly seeks truth and goodness as he can, and he hasn't positively rejected the good in some other area of his life and some other moral aspect of his life, well, then he could still be considered good in moral character. And this, of course, bleeds over into the theological realm as well. Although the repudiation of theism and Christianity is a grave, serious offense, it's possible that the gravity of the sin not have a mortal effect on the soul, and thus sanctifying grace would remain. Remember, in this scenario, we're assuming he was baptized and had sanctifying grace, provided such an individual has not committed, again, like mortal sin or positively rejected the good in some other area, that sanctifying grace could still be remaining in his soul. And given that sanctifying grace remains in his soul, he would attain salvation on condition that he died in such a state. Remember, assuming that his intellectual shortcoming of seeing the truth of God's existence is due to no fault of his own. Remember, God is truth itself. And so inasmuch as someone honestly seeks truth and hasn't hardened his heart through sin, or positively rejecting the good in some other area of his life, he's fundamentally seeking God, even though he may not know it. And as Psalm 44:21 says, only God knows the inner secrets of the heart. So it's possible for an atheist to be invincibly ignorant, that is, not responsible for the intellectual shortcoming of seeing the truth that God exists. Now, just because there may be some atheists who aren't fully culpable for the sin of atheism, that doesn't mean every atheist is exempt from incurring the full guilt of the sin of atheism. So please be clear, I am not claiming that every single person who denies the God's existence is thereby exempt from incurring the mortal guilt, like the full guilt of the sin of atheism. It may be the case that there are some atheists who simply reject the proposition that God exists because maybe they don't want to have any sort of lawgiver to whom they must submit and be judged by. For such an atheist, he would incur the guilt of rejecting God, but because fundamentally, he would be choosing himself in the place of God. Right? So in that case, he would be vincible. He would be responsible for this rejection of God's existence. For other atheists, it might be that he legitimately falls short of seeing the truth that God exists, but such a shortcoming is due to prior immoral behavior that's resulted in intellectual blindness. The atheist in this scenario would be responsible for his ignorance, would be responsible for his intellectual shortcoming of seeing the truth that God exists, and thereby would be held fully accountable for the sin of atheism, for the grave offense of rejecting God's existence. So again, I don't want you, the listener, to walk away with the false impression that I'm saying all atheists can possibly be saved. There's more to it than that. There are more nuances that have to be made. Okay, there's another reason why God cannot be irrelevant to morality, which constitutes basically our third response here to the objection that we're considering in today's episode. And the reason is that God is necessary to account for the order of good within our human nature to be a moral law. So our first response is to say, hey, look, yes, an atheist, the kernel of a truth insofar as an atheist can come to know and follow good inscribed within our human nature by appealing to the natural moral law. Second response, but that doesn't mean the atheist would be able to be good in a complete sense, because God, if he did exist, would be the source of our being and the ultimate good to which we're directed as human beings. And so we would have a duty to worship him, and that would constitute our moral goodness. We would have a duty to direct our life choices toward him as our ultimate good, and that would constitute our moral goodness. So in order to be completely good, morally speaking, as a human being, one would indeed need to be ordered toward God and acknowledging him, worshiping him, directing their life towards him. And so with regard to the atheist, who is invincibly ignorant, he still could achieve that moral goodness. For the atheist who is invincibly ignorant or responsible for his sin of atheism, then he could not achieve that moral goodness. Okay, so now with regard to the God's relevance to morality, the point here is that in order for the natural moral law to be law, to have an obligation on us, to impose an obligation that we must follow, you're going to need God to exist in order to account for the natural moral law to be law. Consider that if God didn't exist, then what would morally bind us to follow the order of human nature? Why should we follow the dictates of our human nature and behave in such a way that achieves the ends toward which our nature directs us? Now, a person might answer these questions by saying, well, because it's the reasonable thing to do. We're rational animals, you know, and we're naturally ordered toward the good. Now, such a response is partially correct. As rational beings, we are directed toward the pursuit of what the intellect perceives as good. And what's good is the achievement of the various ends or goals inherent, embedded within our human nature. Therefore, being rational is the same as being good. But this still doesn't give a sufficient explanation for the obligation, the imposed necessity on the will to follow nature. We all intuitively recognize within ourselves the binding power of our conscience, say, right? A sense of duty to do what we know to be good and avoid what we know to be bad or evil. So the question becomes, from whence does this imposed necessity come? From whence does this obligation to do good and avoid evil come? So yes, sure, we can recognize that it's reasonable and consistent with our rational nature to follow the good inscribed within our nature that we come to know. But the question becomes, why follow what reason tells us to be good? We sense a natural, intuitive, imposed obligation to do so, but from whence does that obligation come? On the other side of the break, we're going to answer that question, and we're going to see clearly why God is ontologically, metaphysically, in reality, necessary for a complete account of morality. Talk to you on the other side. Well, welcome back, my friends, to our last and final segment of today's episode of The Catholic Reason. Before our last break, we left off with the question of whence does our intuitively recognized moral obligation to do good and avoid evil come? We pointed out how, sure, we can recognize that it's a reasonable thing to do good and avoid evil, and that that's consistent with our rational nature as human beings. But the question becomes, why follow that which we discover to be good inscribed within our nature? We all intuitively recognize a sense of moral obligation to do so, and impose necessity upon our will to follow that order of good recognized by reason. But why should we? Whence does this moral obligation come? Well, we can exhaust all the options here in our analysis. So let's start with nature. Maybe it's nature that accounts for this moral obligation. But there are two reasons why nature cannot be the ultimate explanation of the binding power of conscience, this imposed necessity upon the will or obligation. First, if nature were the ultimate source, well, then the precept to do good and avoid evil would be an internal necessity, very much like how fire has an internal necessity to rise given its nature. But no sense can be made in saying that we're bound to do good and avoid evil like fire is bound to rise. The internal necessity of fire is not the kind of necessity that we're talking about when we speak of moral obligation. Of course, nature does direct our wills necessarily to the good in general. Like, we can't help desiring good and pursuing good, so much so that we can only choose anything insofar as we perceive it under the aspect of some good. But it doesn't direct us. Nature doesn't direct us to choose this good or that good in accord with the hierarchy of goods. This is why we're considered moral beings, worthy of praise or blame. If this was accounted for by a strict necessity like fire rises, well, then we wouldn't be subject to moral praise or blame. Nature, therefore, can't be the ultimate source of the binding power of conscience, this imposed necessity to do good and avoid evil. It must have some source, it must have its source in some outside agent. This is why St. Thomas Aquinas concluded in his De Veritate, question 17, article 3, quote, binding has place only in things which are necessary with a necessity imposed by something else. Again, binding has place only in things which are necessary with a necessity imposed by something else. It's important to note, however, that this imposed necessity to do good and avoid evil is not one of coercion, which is repugnant to free will, as St. Thomas Aquinas articulates. Rather, it's like the command of a ruler or a king, imposing necessity on his subjects to do something to achieve some end. That's the sort of necessity we're talking about here. In our case, it's an imposed necessity to do this good or that good to achieve the end of human perfection. That's the nature of this obligation we all intuitively recognize to do good and avoid evil. Now, there's another reason why nature can't be the ultimate source of this binding power of our conscience, at least according to atheism. Within the philosophical view of atheism, the order of nature doesn't express the intelligence or will of any rational being superior to humans. But the question becomes, well, how could something that's the byproduct of random and chaotic non-rational processes morally bind anyone? How could something non-rational be morally binding on that which is rational? Intuitively, we can see that this doesn't make sense, but I think we can do better than intuition. Again, we can appeal to St. Thomas Aquinas here as our guide. He defines law as a, quote, an ordinance of reason for the common good, made by him who has care of the community. That's in the first part of the second part of his Summa Theologiae, question 90, article 4. And he goes on, this ordinance of reason is imposed on others by way of a rule and measure. A law being an ordinance of reason that's imposed presupposes a being of intelligence and volition that can impose it. Therefore, if the order of human nature that determines what's good for us is to be a law that morally binds us, well, then there must exist a being superior to humans that has intellect and will, an ordinance of reason to be imposed upon us by someone outside of us. Without such a personal being that has care of the human community as a whole, there could be no moral obligation. So nature cannot sufficiently account for the moral obligation that we recognize we have to do good and avoid evil. Now, these reasons why nature can't be the ultimate source of moral obligation also help us see why our own conscience doesn't suffice either. First, recall how we said previously that the imposed necessity we experience must come from something outside ourselves. Well, our conscience ain't outside of ourselves, right? Secondly, a person isn't bound except through a superior. As St. Thomas writes, one is under no obligation to an inferior as such. That's from the second part of his second part of the Summa Theologiae, question 60, article 6. The implication here is that one is obliged only to a superior. Elsewhere, Aquinas teaches that one has authority over another only insofar as he's been invested with authority by a higher authority. That's in the second part of the second part of his Summa, question 105, article 2. But our conscience can't be superior to ourselves. That doesn't make sense. And for these reasons, conscience doesn't suffice as an explanation for our moral obligation. So neither nature nor conscience suffices. Well, what about another human being? If the imposed necessity must come from an outside agent, as we stated already, well, perhaps it could be another human being. But if atheism is true, this doesn't work either. Remember, only a superior can morally bind a person's will. But in the atheistic view, there's no higher authority than human beings to invest one person with authority over others. Thomas Merton sums it up quite nicely in his The Ascent to Truth. In the name of whom or what do you ask me to behave? Why should I go to the inconvenience of denying myself the satisfactions I desire in the name of some standard that exists only in your imagination? Merton recognized that without God, no human being could morally bind us to do good and avoid evil. All moral precepts would be simply expressions of personal wishes. I would like for you to do that or this. I would wish for you to do this. There could be no commands. Do this, do that, avoid this, avoid that. Francis Beckwith and Gregory Kokel describe the unreasonableness of the moral atheist position, at least when it comes to accounting for moral obligation, in their book, Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Mid-Air. They write this: a moral atheist is like someone sitting down to dinner who doesn't believe in farmers, ranchers, fishermen, or cooks. She believes the food just appears with no explanation and no sufficient cause. This is silly, they say. Either her meal is an illusion or someone provided it. In the same way, if morals really exist, and I would specify moral obligation here, then some cause adequate to explain the effect must account for them. God is the most reasonable solution, so they conclude. Beckwith and Kokel understand that denying God's existence results in an insufficient explanation for moral obligation. How can the moral law be a law if there's no moral lawgiver behind it that surpasses human authority? The answer is it can't. There can be no moral law without a lawgiver of intellect and will superior to human beings. Now, there are many moral atheists and agnostics that we could lock arms with in the pursuit of a just and peaceful society. However, only the theists would be consistent in saying that such just and peaceful behaviors are morally obligatory. Again, obligation is the key focus here. You can get away with personal moral codes without God, including following some aspects of the order of human nature, but not moral obligation. You're going to need God to exist in order to account for the moral obligation. Atheists are going to have to make a choice, either give up atheism in order to keep moral obligation, or give up moral obligation in order to keep atheism. If our atheist friends decide to go with the latter option and give up moral obligation, then we're just in the arena of moral relativism, which of course makes morality a mere illusion. You can't say any human behavior is good or bad if moral truth is not objective, but relative to an individual or group of individuals' judgment. If we're not obliged to do what is good for us as human beings, well, then there's no morality, since the first precept of the natural moral law is good is to be done and pursued and evil is to be avoided. Now, our atheist friend doesn't want to follow the logic and concede moral relativism. If he's willing to give up morality insofar as he gives up moral obligation, well, then what sense can be made of saying he's morally good, like theists, without God? None. If there's no morality, which would be the case if there's no moral obligation, well, then there's no being morally good or bad that applies to all human beings, whether atheists or theists. Hopefully, our atheist friend isn't willing to retreat to this corner of moral nihilism. If he does, all we can do is leave him there and assure him that when he's ready to come out and give up his atheism and embrace moral obligation, we will be there for him. Well, my friends, that brings us to the end of this week's episode of The Catholic Reason. My claim today is that an atheist can't appeal to his moral goodness as evidence for God's irrelevance to morality. Insofar as God is our creator and the ultimate good to which we must direct our choices, our worship of him, and the direction of our lives toward friendship with him constitutes our human good, and thus constitutes what's morally good for us. Moreover, God is the ultimate explanation for our moral obligation to live in harmony with the order of good inscribed within our human nature. Therefore, he is most relevant to morality. To quote Pope St. John Paul II in his 2002 World Youth Day homily, "The greatest deception, the deepest source of unhappiness, is the illusion of finding life by excluding God." Well, my friends, thanks for listening to The Catholic Reason, again, a production of St. Michael Radio, based here in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. You can download the show by subscribing to the Eastern Oklahoma Catholic Podcast. Check out my website, CorloBrusard.com. You can access the archived episodes there. I invite you to join me again next week for The Catholic Reason. Tell a friend. I'll talk to you then. God bless.